We're at the intersection of politics and religion as we explore the concept of spiritual socialism here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. This is a conversation about the religious left in America and a history that hasn't really been fully fleshed out. So we're going to park in the period of time, roughly the 1920s until 1970, when a new religious activism took shape with the idea that simple acts of caring for the sick and the impoverished and exploited members of our society would eventually change the world. And we'll bring this into contemporary themes and how spiritual socialism looks today. So do you think religion can influence political affiliations? Do you think socialism is spiritual or secular? Do you consider yourself a socialist? How did you arrive at that label? We're at 800-642-1234. Vanessa Cook's new book is called Spiritual Socialism: Religion and the American Left, and she's a history lecturer at UW-Madison. Vanessa, welcome back to the Ideas Network.
Thank you.
So when we talk about politics or religion or economics, capitalism, we often take them in isolation and not taking into account the social movements and the thought leaders of the day. But you look holistically and you found religion to be left out in the study of the rise of the left. Why is that?
I think that people have a very traditional definition of socialism, so that's one reason why they may have overlooked this particular tradition that I've come across and researched over the past 10 years. So that's one reason. Other reasons point to, you know, people have a conception of the left as mostly secular or even atheist, as you say, which is not true at all, and so that's a misconception that I'm trying to correct in the book, with the book. And also, I think when people think of religion and politics, that intersection you just mentioned, they think more in terms of a conservative agenda or conservative activists talking about political issues or cultural issues such as abortion or gay marriage or
the moral majority.
The moral majority, yes, that kind of religious right sort of political activism and political rhetoric is just has captured national attention, particularly in the last couple of decades. And the religious left has not been as visible on the national scale.
So if we can't put a really rigid definition around socialism, what is the spiritual influence here? What are you getting at?
So the definition that I work with in the book and how the figures in the book identified as socialist, you know, when people hear that word, I think they automatically or typically think of a very top-heavy institution, very strong central government providing welfare and other programs. The spiritual socialists in the book, though, didn't believe in that type of socialism. In fact, they criticized that type of socialism quite a bit. Instead, they really thought of socialism more as community building and that people should take care of each other in their local communities, care for each other, take respect each other and advocate for each other in the communities. And so it was much more a socialism from the bottom up for the people in my book rather than a top down sort of.
How did that permeate into the political realm? And then what about capitalism? What about economics and all of the markets of making money and getting ahead?
So the spiritual socialists in my book, the figures that I profile, they definitely were critical of capitalism because they thought it did contribute in many ways to exploiting people and inequality in terms of class and in money and financial security. But they also expanded their agenda and included things like race and gender because they realized that people weren't just workers and they didn't just have economic or material needs, but they also had spiritual needs. And they also might face discrimination, not just on terms of class, but also gender and race and other disadvantages that they might have in society. So the spiritual socialists in my book really did look holistically at an individual and try to address the needs of the individual in the complexity of that, not just in terms of economic or their working status.
We're talking with Vanessa Cook. She's the author of Spiritual Socialists, Religion and the American Left. We're talking about the religious left and its rich history, looking at all the dimensions. Do you think socialism is spiritual or secular? Do you identify as a socialist or a communist? What does that mean to you? When did you start identifying this way? We're at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. Vanessa, why is it important to you to look between 1920 to 1970? You know, what happened after World War One?
That's a good question. I had to limit my research in some way, but it did also, there was a reason that I came up with. After World War One, the war had a profound effect on people, often in a negative way, making them disillusioned about progress, about any kind of notion of a kingdom of God on earth or kingdom of heaven on earth ever coming into fruition, because the war had been so violent and so destructive. And so it really dashed a lot of hopes for people. But there were activists who said, you know, we've had setbacks, but it's just going to take more time. It's not going to be as a quick fix. And so we just need to be more radical and more devoted to building from the bottom up. And so that's the kind of rhetoric that I started to hear and read about from these activists that started to coalesce around the 1920s.
And then the 1940s and 50s, the American left, as you describe it, is fragmented, is kind of falling into pieces. What is happening in this era as you look at faith and politics?
So again, a lot of disillusionment from people on the left who had really hoped that the Soviet Union or that communism would usher in this new world that, you know, had so much promise. By the 40s and 50s, many leftists around the world, but particularly in America, realizing that Stalin, for example, was not going to be that kind of socialist. He was more just a dictator, and so very critical of him. Realizing that the Communist Party was corrupt, even the Socialist Party in the U.S., some would say, was very corrupt or, you know, used violence and advocated violence. So there was a turning away from those sorts of political parties that they saw as more power hungry rather than caring about actually building a socialist society. And there was a lot of reorientation and reorganizing among leftists in the 40s and 50s. And that's where spiritual socialists, you know, really thrived or started to be recognized, because they had never really subscribed too much to a party ideology that was more of the community-based activism. And so they got a hearing from a lot of activists looking for values and wanting those human values back into the political agenda.
So suddenly we're seeing the rise of like social justice infused into politics?
Yes, a lot of social justice infused into politics. Well, that had always been the case,
okay.
But really looking at values rather than just dogma. That was something that they could contribute.
Vanessa Cook is our guide as we explore the intellectual tradition of spiritual socialism in our country and what happened after World War One. Her new book is called Spiritual Socialists, Religion and the American Left. And we're talking about her research into how the left built up around religious values and democracy. Do you follow past leaders who espoused socialist thinking like Martin Luther King Jr. or Dorothy Day? Do you line up behind Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders today or Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez and ideals of democratic socialism? What do you think of their influence? Join in 800-642-1234. Tweet us, WPR Mornings. Back for more conversation with Vanessa Cook here on the Ideas Network. If you're just joining us, we're learning about spiritual socialism here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Historian Vanessa Cook helps fill in the edges around the concept of spiritual socialism. She writes that spiritual socialists teach us we cannot understand the left in U.S. history without grappling with the ways in which religious values help ground socialist theory in our politics. Your thoughts on this, 800-642-1234. Do you follow values of peace and cooperation? Should politicians consider more spiritual thinking or weigh more social justice as they legislate and make policy? Are you part of the clergy? What do you pass on to your congregation about politics and spirituality? Join in, 800-642-1234. And Vanessa Cook's new book is called Spiritual Socialist. She stays with us for the hour. Vanessa, you say that spiritual socialists predated the new left and capitalized new and left here. What is or was the new left?
So the new left is, if you think about the political movements, the protest movements that we think of when with the 50s and particularly the 60s, that is the new left, including the civil rights movement, the classic civil rights movement of Martin Luther King Jr. era, but also the anti-war movements during the Vietnam War era. All those movements, very diverse in the 1960s on many different issues, women's rights, civil rights, gay and lesbian rights, all those rights-based movements or anti-war movements were part of the new left. And so spiritual socialism, I see dovetailing with that in the 50s and 60s because they were speaking in terms of values more than doctrine or dogma, more about spiritual needs than just a Marxist analysis of capitalism. Things about race and gender were on the agenda that hadn't really been talked about in detail before in the left. And so when I was starting to research this project, I started out actually reading mostly about the new left in these protest movements of the 60s. And I noticed very spiritual language in things like the Port Huron Statement of 1962. If you've read that, it's a lot of language about love and fellowship of man, brotherhood of man, and dignity of the individual and democracy. And I started to think, oh, well, maybe there was a spiritual component to the new left that has really gone, has really been missed or hasn't been written about. And so that was the genesis of this project. And then I just started going back in history to try to find, you know, where this tradition might have started.
Did spiritual socialists actually want a fully socialist society? I mean, were they glomming on to that, or did they really know what they wanted?
There was some confusion, and it's hard to just generalize. Mm-hmm. With each individual had a slightly different conception of it, but they all believed in the kingdom of God on earth, the possibility of working towards that, maybe not a completely perfect society, but approaching it as much as possible. And so that was their mission in life, is to try and build a better world that, you know, would be in accordance with God's will for human beings. And so they, like I started to notice in the new left literature, they heard socialists talking about the need for, you know, less inequality, or you know, more freedom, more equality for people, more democracy, treating each other better. And they thought, oh, well, that sounds a lot like, you know, what Jesus talked about in the Gospels or what the prophets talked about in the Old Testament. And that's how they saw that connection, that, you know, maybe we are socialists because these seem like the same goals we have and the same beliefs we have.
Talking with Vanessa Cook, she's the author of Spiritual Socialists, and we're talking about the rise of spiritual socialists in the 20th century who envisioned this future utopian society that reflected peace and cooperation. Do you consider your socialism to be spiritual? How is this part of your worldview beyond the political realm? Join in at 800-642-1234. You can email ideas at WPR.org. We have a comment here. Matt from Wausau called in to say that Unitarian Universalists are an example of a people-first spiritual movement on the left. Their doctrine supports human rights and inclusivity. So Matt there drawing a connection to his faith. What do you make of that?
Yes, I would consider that Unitarian has a very long tradition of being progressive on a lot of political issues. Quakerism, or the Society of Friends, is another one. well known for anti-war activism and human rights activism. But even, you know, many Lutheran churches can take a more progressive stance on issues and be more inclusive. UCC, United Church of Christ, is often more progressive and inclusive. So it is out there.
Let's fill in a little bit more on the thought leaders of the day. You write about Dorothy Day in your book. Give her more of a person here. Who was Day and what was her significance in this history?
So Dorothy Day, interestingly enough, grew up not attending church, not identifying really as religious. But then she had a spiritual awakening after the birth of her daughter in the late 20s, and she all of a sudden became very spiritual and wanted to belong to a church. She picked the Catholic Church. She became a very devout Catholic, attended church regularly. But she really didn't want to give up on that kind of, she had been a radical progressive or, you know, a radical in her past. She didn't want to give up on helping people directly. And so she thought, well, I can use my religious beliefs to help people directly, especially during the Great Depression. So she opened the first Catholic worker house. It was a settlement house or a shelter for people who needed food, a temporary housing. People who were just down and out on their luck in the early 30s during the Depression, she would open the doors to Catholic Worker to provide for them. And so Catholic Workers started to spring up around the country, around the world. They had a newspaper that's still going on today, I believe. And a Catholic Worker still exists. In fact, there's one in Madison. I think it's St. Francis Catholic Worker. So she's a great example of someone using her religious values to help people directly in these progressive causes. She was also a pacifist, so she was very outspoken against violence.
And you write that the beliefs behind Dorothy Day's actions, they aren't well documented or well understood. Why was that?
I think Dorothy Day has actually, there's actually a lot written about her. There are a bunch of biographies. Marquette University has her archives, which I've used. She has bound volumes, you know, a scholar put together her letters and her diary that's available at libraries. She's also written memoir. She wrote memoirs over her life about this transition from being a radical to a more religious radical. So there's a lot written about her. I think the part that's new in the book is calling her a socialist, using the definition I'm using, because people associate socialism with that top-down sort of structure. She was against that kind of institutional-based.
How did spiritual socialists help to expand the left's political agenda when you look at the politics of it?
Well, I think just a broader array of issues, like I said, with race and gender, sexual orientation becoming something that people were mobilizing on more and more in the 50s and 60s, 70s, up into today. I think that spiritual socialists contributed to that because they looked at the sanctity of each person as, you know, a child of God and thought, well, each individual deserves to be treated with love and respect, you know, regardless of their race or their gender or their orientation or their status in society. So I think that belief, and it's the theological term is personalism, you know, that sacredness of each individual, that really opened up progressives to seeing the whole person in their complexity.
If it hadn't been for the Dorothy Day or the Martin Luther King Jr., would we have a sense of what spiritual socialism is? I mean, how much of a role did these thought leaders have in this movement?
A tremendous role, although, you know, people still don't see, you know, the general public, I don't think, realizes Martin Luther King's socialist identity. You know, there's been a little bit written about that, but that could, there's more to be said about that in the public sphere. But I think he's a great example of someone, if you want an example of spiritual socialism, he would be, you know, the most prominent figure that, you know, Americans would be able to identify and understand. Dorothy Day as well. She wrote a lot. Most of these figures in the book were nationally known at their time as religious voices, as political voices, as activists. So they weren't necessarily obscure, But there are a lot of spiritual socialists who are doing the work in communities, and they don't get the credit.
They don't get the attention, the visibility,
because the media doesn't see that as a dramatic news story. You know, long-term community building isn't very dramatic. So there's a lot of that work going on that isn't visible at the national level in particular.
We have UW-Madison history lecturer Vanessa Cook with us as we explore the political left and where she's seen evidence of religious motivation. We started in the 20s and 30s when progressive religious activists first started to challenge the Communist Party and Socialist Party. We're moving into today when we see democratic socialism on the presidential campaign trail. So how do you see socialism in America today? How does it pair with the social justice icons of the 50s and 60s, like Dorothy Day and MLK? Do you identify as a socialist or a communist? What does that mean to you? We're at 800-642-1234. Tweet us, WPR Mornings. We'll get back to this book, Spiritual Socialists, and more with Vanessa Cook right after this news update on the Ideas Network. You're with us in the morning show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Wisconsin Public Radio has a new podcast called Derailed, and a new episode drops today. This is the story of how high-speed rail almost came to Wisconsin, and this new episode, it connects our state to California as they're building high-speed rail between San Francisco and L.A. Find Derailed wherever you get your podcasts or at WPR.org. Right now, we're exploring the unique vision of spiritual socialists who believe they could create the foundation for a better world. The book is called Spiritual Socialists, Religion and the American Left. Author Vanessa Cook looks at how this came to be, socialism as a decentralized religious way of life, and then how this fits into where we are today. It's a journey. Your questions and thoughts along the way at 800-642-1234. What do you think defines democratic socialism today? How do you see it linking up with spiritual socialism? Let's talk about it. And historian Vanessa Cook stays with us through the hour. Let's go to Victoria now, joining us from Williams Bay. Good morning, Victoria.
Good morning. Thank you so much for this interesting discussion of this topic. I think Ms. Cook is addressing some of the areas that have not been addressed to this point. And I'm also writing a book which is taking socialism from another perspective. I'm writing a hybrid memoir combined with a social political commentary, but two of the issues that I'm addressing are the whole entrepreneurial nature of socialism that existed in American history, especially in the beginning of the 1900s, pre-World War I. Pre-World War I, there were all sorts of entrepreneurial activities that were undertaken by quote, socialists. Socialists were starting businesses. They were building buildings. They were in the corporate world. They were silk stocking socialists in the New York world. And one of the things that they also did is they adopted platforms for their socialist theories that disconnected from any other larger platforms were addressed to American social issues. In the early 1900s, you didn't have child labor laws. You didn't have work safety laws. So you had issues like the Triangle Fire and people trapped in factories and dying from unhealthy and unsafe
conditions.
And those all became part of our basic part of our American labor laws.
Well,
they're not radical issues. They radically changed the foundation of the United States. They didn't make this a left or right issue. They made this a basic care issue for
children. A basic human dignity issue. Yeah, Victoria, I want Vanessa here to react to this entrepreneurial.
Yes,
socialism.
Absolutely, entrepreneurial socialism. The examples you mentioned. Before World War I, definitely springing up all over. And that's because, socialists were critical of capitalism and the way it was operating and thought we need alternatives. We need to build alternative institutions for that new society to emerge. In my book, you know, I talk mostly post-World War I, but in my book, the best example of that is Sherwood Eddy, who had been a YMCA missionary and then became an outspoken Christian socialist starting in the 20s. And in the 30s, he realized, you know, during the Great Depression, all these people suffering, particularly sharecroppers in the South, were displaced, out of work, and the New Deal wasn't really reaching them. So he used some of his own money. He was also effective at fundraising for, among other spiritual socialists. And he bought two farms in Arkansas and invited these sharecroppers, most of them African Americans, but also poor whites, to live there, to work together, to live together. And this was his way of helping people directly, but also trying to experiment with these alternative economic models.
Yeah. Victoria, thank you so much for calling in. Let's go to Troy now in Muskego. Hi, Troy.
Hello. I'm a Democratic socialist, and I just think that I really feel that there's a lot of ignorance on the part of what the Republicans try and spread around. I feel that the big divide came when, Democratic socialism actually built our middle class. They gave our unions. They put us in a position as a society where a lot of those people's children and grandchildren that came from being democratic socialists were able to actually start up their own businesses because they came from, you know, parents that had good paying jobs with benefits. And now those kids are like, they're entrepreneurs and capitalists, and they look at socialism like it's a form of communism just because there was a strategy that was used to break unions. To get people to think that, you know, they can't get you to do more for less now if they believe in democratic socialism, so they have to use capitalism to benefit only the business owners and oppress labor. And
Troy,
we need to get back to... Go ahead, sorry.
Yeah, Troy, I want to pause right here as he sees a real generational shift from democratic socialism and socialism values into more capitalistic exploits. What do you make of that?
Well, democratic socialism, as Troy just identified as a democratic socialist, that I think is the most accepted form of socialism today. The old forms of socialism aren't as readily accepted or as seen as effective. And I think generationally, yes, he's right that people have benefited from unions organizing. If you have a work day that's 8 hours, if you have time off, if you have sick leave, if you have, you know, a safe working environment, you can thank a union worker or a socialist of the past for advocating and putting their life on the line for those issues that we take for granted today. I would point out that spiritual socialists are basically democratic socialists, but who talk about religious values more often than not. And so there's just that spiritual component to it. But they're basically democratic socialists, as is most of the advanced world, most of Europe, Canada are democratic socialists. So these models do exist. And I know socialism is used as a scare tactic by conservatives, but it is something that most of the world does live with comfortably.
And Troy says, look, it has an image problem as well to contend with. You said something really interesting earlier in that Martin Luther King Jr. had spiritual socialistic tendencies. Can you help us fill that in a little bit more?
Well, definitely the spiritual part's there. Mm-hmm. I mean, he was a very prominent religious voice in America at the time. But, you know, he spoke in the same language and believed the same as these other figures in my book, you know, that we needed to work towards a society where people weren't discriminated against, that there wasn't inequality, that everyone had equal opportunity, that, you know, the poor were important and we needed to help them. He saw that as a direct extension of his Christian beliefs, his Christian values. And so he didn't use the word socialism too much publicly because he realized that he would be criticized for it or would be misunderstood in the way that he was thinking of it. But yes, he's definitely, if you put into an internet search Martin Luther King Jr. and socialism, there will be a lot of information there for you if you'd like to read more about it. I've written some articles on it, but you can also read about it in the book.
Well, here we are in the 1960s. There is a lot of social uprising going on, especially on college campuses. Where do you see the spiritual component as you look at the younger activism in the 60s and what is happening on campuses?
Well, the New Left, as I said, when you read their writing, Support Huron Statement or other literature that they were writing, essays they were writing, you can see that spiritual language coming forth, talking about, you know, human rights, dignity, peace, cooperation, brotherhood of man. That stuff is there. But on the campuses, you know, many activists were motivated to get involved in the civil rights movement because it was so offensive to their spiritual beliefs that these people were facing violence and discrimination just because of the color of their skin. And they saw that as, you know, not becoming of a Christian nation or a religious nation. So, you know, definitely spiritual values played into getting them involved in activism. And then, you know, standing up to the forces and authorities who were perpetuating that kind of violence and indignity.
We're talking with Vanessa Cook. She's the author of Spiritual Socialists, Religion and the American Left. You can join in through the hour at 800-642-1234. Vanessa, what are some other examples of spiritual socialists throughout our history? I mean, you've mentioned several, but you write about many of these thought leaders in your book. Who stands out?
So A.J. Mustey is another one who, you know, some of you may have heard of. He was a pacifist, so he did, you know, participate in anti-war marches, for example, during the Vietnam War era, World War II era. He was friends with Dorothy Day, and they would often go to demonstrations together. But he was also a labor educator, and he started out, well, he was a minister first, lost his pulpit during World War I because he was outspoken against the war, and then became radicalized to fight for the, you know, working class. And he co-founded what was called Brookwood Labor College in upstate New York, and it was a place where workers could come and have sort of a retreat and an educational program that they could attend to try and help them, you know, give them skills and a knowledge base so that they could identify issues that they had in the workplace and start to organize on those issues. So he is someone I talk about in the book. Miles Horton, Highlander Folk School in Tennessee, labor education and civil rights education. A lot of the civil rights activists who became prominent in the 50s and 60s, such as Martin Luther King Jr., such as Rosa Parks, spent time at Highlander Folk School or attended the programs. So definitely instrumental in that kind of movement.
Author Vanessa Cook is our guide as we explore her research around the rise of spiritual socialists in the 20th century and where we are today. How do you express your religion? Does it inform your politics? What questions do you have about spiritual socialism and the role of religion in political movements? Join in at 800-642-1234. Email ideas at WPR.org. We'll be back with Vanessa Cook in just a moment. Stay with us here on the Ideas Network. We're having an hour-long conversation around spiritual socialism here on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. Thanks for being here. Author Vanessa Cook, she traces the roots of spiritual socialism to the 1920s and then the drop-off around 1970. And she asked the question, what happened to the moral underpinnings of social justice and economic equality in the late 20th century? Where did it go? She writes, the persistence of capitalistic priorities, imperialism, warfare, and poverty, in fact, makes socialism seem an impossible dream. Is it impossible, or do you see it at work in your community? Do you label yourself as a socialist? We're at 800-642-1234, and Vanessa Cook's book is called Spiritual Socialist, and she stays with us. Well, let's talk about Vermont Senator Bernie Sanders, who's been talking about democratic socialism for decades as a mayor, as a member of Congress, as a presidential candidate on the trail. Here he is in June delivering an address at George Washington University.
We must recognize that in the 21st century, in the wealthiest country in the history of the world, economic rights are human rights. And that is what I mean by democratic socialism.
So in the clip, do you find that he is, you know, dead on about what democratic socialism means today?
Yes, Bernie Sanders is obviously the most visible political candidate or activist for democratic socialism today. And he does embrace that very strongly and doesn't shy away from identifying as a democratic socialist. And his quote there, you know, economic rights or human rights, I think he's getting at, you know, that democratic socialism is really about human beings and caring for each other and offering opportunities for growth and, you know, giving people a living wage so that they are not suffering that sort of or struggling or suffering. That sort of sensibility about how we can do better in society to treat each other better. And he's really putting a moral argument there at the core. He says it's a moral issue. And I think that's what the spiritual socialist that I write about also thought of all these political issues as very moral and about human rights.
You consider Sanders' views to be similar in the vein of Reverend William J. Barber, the American Protestant minister and political activist. Where do you see the connection there?
So Reverend William Barber has been getting a lot of attention in the past few years. He spoke at the Democratic National Convention in 2016 and gave a very impassioned speech about the need for a moral revival in the country. And he's been often linked to compared to a Martin Luther King Jr. of our day. So he, Barber and Bernie Sanders are both out there talking about building up communities, building a more equitable society. Barber's out there criticizing corruption in politics, undermining our voting laws. You know, he's gone to prison to protect voting rights in North Carolina. He has a Poor People's Campaign across the country where he and Liz Theo Harris, his co-founder, travel around the country talking about organizing and helping the poor in cities and towns and across the United States.
In fact, he tweeted yesterday, from the former plantations of Louisiana to the hills of Kentucky, the Poor People's Campaign has been building out a moral movement this past week. So he's tweeting about it and he's out there. What do you see in that in the context of spiritual socialism?
So Barber definitely he's part of the tradition of spiritual socialism, I would argue. I do talk about him in the epilogue of the book because he represents it so well today. He's probably the most visible example of spiritual socialism today. It is interesting, though, that he has an issue with the term religious left. Many of the articles that you'll read about in the New York Times or elsewhere will say he's revitalizing the religious left. And he rejects that label and term because, as you said earlier, you know, he doesn't want that term to be divisive. He really wants to advocate a moral core of belief and thinks that Christian values or religious values should apply broadly and they shouldn't really be captured by the left or the right side of a political spectrum, that, you know, they really should apply broadly to everyone.
Vanessa Cook is the author of Spiritual Socialists. She's also a history lecturer at UW-Madison. Still time for you at 800-642-1234. Let's go to Will now in Madison. Hi, Will.
Hello. Good morning. As I heard you speak about the Highlander School, I remembered that very sadly the school was burned to the ground, and I believe it was proven to be a racist incident. So here, the school that, you know, was a part of the education of Martin Luther King and Rosa Parks may have been burned down based on the very things that you're talking about. And I was curious, had you heard about this? And
I have, yep.
So what era we're in, where the very foundations of the education for the movement of it's appalling. That's all I have to say.
Yes, I did hear about that incident not too long ago. And Highlander Folk School always faced that challenge from white supremacists, being in Tennessee, for example, and offering integrated educational environment. You know, blacks and whites worked and lived together and attended programs together. So they were promoting integration of the races, which, you know, got a lot of backlash. Same thing happened with the Delta Cooperative Farms that I mentioned earlier, Sherwood Eddy. That had to close down after several years because they were facing so much resistance from the white population in Arkansas, who had a problem with, again, black and white workers living in integrated society like that.
Mm. Let's go to Barb now in Green Bay. Barb, hi.
Hello. I've been thinking for a while, I've been noticing a kind of a trend when I look around at the political situation, and it's a simplistic idea, but basically I know it's human nature to only care what's happening in your own backyard and how you're affected and directly affected. And I see a big difference. And to me, socialism in the broad view is people who see the rest of the country and the rest of the world as their own backyard. And yeah. Care what happens to them.
Yeah, I like that. I like that a lot. I think that is a really essential way of putting it. Socialists in the past and today really try to advocate for everyone and believe that everyone should be cared for, and that it's not just about money or your own well-being, but that you should care about the welfare of others in your community, in your nation, in the world. And see all human beings as equal, regardless of where they come from. So, yeah, I really do like that definition that you have there.
We've seen other progressive politicians in recent years, like Congresswoman Alexandria Ocasio-Cortez, identify themselves as democratic socialists. What do you think that says about our current political moment that we're in?
Well, I think that people are getting, especially younger voters, are more comfortable with the idea of socialism. They haven't maybe grown up in the Cold War and that rigid sort of ideology against socialism of any kind because the Soviet Union was so associated with it. So that younger generation, I don't think, has that kind of they don't envision socialism as a Soviet Union type of structure. And they have traveled extensively through Europe and Canada and elsewhere and can see that, you know, democratic socialism is alive and well in those countries. They're also feeling the pinch. And so that's motivating them to want to support these policies and programs that people like Bernie Sanders and AOC are advocating because, you know, they are struggling with health care costs and they're struggling to find a job. They're struggling with student debt. And so that makes them more open to those ideas as well.
So they really see that this permeates all of society and the issues that hit home to them, they can see that across the country, across the world.
Yes. And I think that there is a dissatisfaction with both major parties. The Democratic Party can be, you know, just as supportive of capitalism and those big donors that they're representing. And so they're, you know, voters are looking to people who can shake up the system in a positive way for them.
Vanessa, thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you. Thank you.
Vanessa Cook is author of Spiritual Socialists, Religion and the American Left. She is also a history lecturer at UW-Madison. You find this conversation on The Morning Show. I'm Kate Archer-Kent. You're listening to the Ideas Network.